Exciting. All right. Good morning. Welcome to Jericho Road Church. We are down a pastor today because Pastor Trevor and Krista had their baby this week. So Wednesday, their baby was born. So they're probably joining us online. They're like guilty Christians like that. So hi, you guys. And this, so this would be Josiah's first church service. He's online with us. And so, so exciting. Everything's okay. They're healthy. They're well. All the toes and fingers are there. And lots of them. He's got huge hands. And so what a blessing. So congratulations to them. They'll be out for a couple of weeks, and then they'll be joining us as soon as they can. They are obsessed with church, so they'll be here way too soon, probably. So can't wait to bring them back. So it's great to be here with you this morning, friends. We get to look at the third book in our series, 4 Books in 5 Weeks. And today we're going to be looking at the book of 3 John, and we're going to discover in this book, he's going to point out an incredible value regarding having good examples in our lives, having believers that we can see and emulate, and the importance of that, especially in light of all the bad examples that are around us in life. So he's going to draw a sharp contrast between two individuals and the benefits and the blessings of one over the other. So that's what we're going to be seeing this morning. Here's our first guy. It's in 3 John chapter 1, and there's only one chapter and first verse. The elder, that's John, referring to himself because he's old still as he writes this, he says, to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. So this guy Gaius, there's three other Gaiuses mentioned in the New Testament, one in Acts 19, one in 1 Corinthians 1, and one in Romans 16. So Gaius is the Michael Kim of the ancient world. So it's like, you know, Michael Kim, the guy who drives a Tesla, that guy. Yeah, like we all know four of those guys. So that was Gaius. So we're not sure if this is the same guy four times or if it's four different guys. But that's how it was. There was a really popular name. Gaius was a really popular name. So 3 John starts with this is just what we looked at last week, right? Love and truth. And like that is not what today's sermon is about, but it's sort of a reminder. That's what we were looking at last week, love and truth. Oh, my goodness. So here he jumps into the letter. He says, my dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. And go well with you means also could be translated prosper. Now, this written greeting is super common. It's really interesting, though, because it's a Roman greeting. When you read Paul's letter, he says primarily a Jewish greeting, or even became a Christian greeting, where he would say grace and mercy and peace to you. But John here says, like, oh, he uses this really common phrase that happens in the Roman world where it says, I hope that you're healthy and you're prosperous. And that's really common. If you've ever visited any foreign countries and you tried to learn the language, almost all languages have in their greeting or in some sort of interaction initially is where you wish a blessing upon them. Oh, bless your family. I hope you guys are prosperous or well. You know, if you've been almost anywhere in the world, it's kind of like that. And the Romans had this. Sort of like when your grandma writes XOXO, you know, hugs and love, like that kind of stuff. Like, that was really common. And everybody, in fact, it was so common they just abbreviated it. They didn't even write this out normally all the way. But then John adds, so he says, like, I'm praying for your good health and I'm praying for your prosperity. And then he adds a Christian twist to it, though. Then he says, I'm also praying for the prosperity of your soul. So he says, I hope your health is good. I hope your finances are good. And he adds on, I hope your soul is well. I hope your soul is prosperous. So that's kind of cool. And then he jumps, wastes no time in jumping to his first point, learning from good versus bad examples. And we're going to see two guys, Gaius, who he's writing to, and another guy named Diotrephes. Okay, so here it goes. It gave me great joy when some believers came and they testified about your faithfulness to the truth. They were telling how you continue to walk in it. And I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in truth. Dear friend, you are faithful in what you're doing for the brothers and the sisters, even though they're strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. Please send them on their way in a manner that honors God. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such people so that we may work together for the truth. Okay, so let's notice some things here, and I happen to underline them for you so it'll be easy to track. Let's notice some of the good traits of Gaius, which make him a good example, and I think are things that we can bring into our life, things that we ought to have showing up in our life as we want to follow Jesus well, as we want to be good examples to those that are around us. The first one we see is Gaius' faithfulness to the truth. He's a committed Christian to the he's committed to the truth of the Christian message. So much so that people actually notice it. And they say, like, oh, he's following, he's this Christian who's really faithful. They notice that he's walking in the truth that he believes. Now, this is critical for us because one of the major criticisms leveled against Christ in our day is the hypocrisy of Christians. So many people will reject Christ because of the hypocrisy of the Christians. The truth actually becomes odious to people if they know that we know the truth and yet we don't walk in the truth. Then even if you share that truth, nobody wants it because they see the stench of hypocrisy on it. So let's not just talk the talk, let's walk the truth. Right? So yeah, walk the truth. Walk the walk. And so that's one thing that that John says, like, you're known for that. People know you're a follower of the truth and they see it in your life. Then he says, also noticed is that you care for all the brothers and the sisters, for all the things that you're doing for the brothers and sisters. John praised Gaius for his hospitality. Now, this may seem somewhat trivial to us, but it isn't to God. Hospitality is the practical outworking that is essential command to love one another. It's really love in action is hospitality. Caring for other people is how we demonstrate love. Jesus promised that someone who even gave a cup of water to like a little kid. Now, we like little kids nowadays, but back in the ancient times, they didn't. Little kids were like lower than slaves. And so Jesus says, even if you gave a cup of water to one of these little kids, that'll be remembered in the kingdom of heaven. And so hospitality, even to the lowest possible person, God says, I noticed that. And that is exemplary and worth copying. Now, this also explains why John would be willing to pray for Gaius' prosperity, because Gaius is not shy about helping other people. Gaius is willing to share what God has given him, his resources, to bless other people. And God knows if God blesses him with more, then Gaius will turn around and bless people more. Huh, youth group? We were just talking about this on Friday night, talking about how God blesses us so that we could be generous to other people. And I had a chance to fill in because Pastor Trevor had his baby, so yeah. The next thing we notice here is that Gaius has a love for people. Like, love is beautiful. Love is necessary. Love is Christian. What a cool testimony if people say something like, oh, you know that couple Susan and Sang? They're like, they're so loving. They're loving to each other, but they're loving to those that are around them. And that's a fact about Susan and Sang in our church, but isn't that a cool commendation for anyone? Isn't that something where, like, yeah, I want to see how they're loving it, and I want to love people as well. I want to become exemplary in this area also. Then we see that John says Gaius is willing to be generous. Now, the last part is a tiny bit confusing because he's not using the word money, but he's actually talking about money. He's saying for the receiving of help from, what he's talking about is like that Gaius gives money to missionaries. So the help of the gospel he's giving isn't like, do it, you're doing great, like that. It's like, oh, here, let me help pay for you so that you can afford to go do these missions kind of thing. And so willing to honor God in generosity is this attribute we see at the bottom there. Christians are called to help missionaries financially to honor God. John said that these Christian missionaries actually shouldn't take one of common practices of the day is if it's like busking. If you went out and you played your guitar, people would give you money. So there were many teachers who would go out, and if someone listened to their talk, that they would pay them money. And John is saying, don't take actually everybody's money. Don't take non-Christians' money. That's why in our announcements when we say, if this is your first time here and the offering, it's not for you. We don't want you to give any money, because he says it ought to be the responsibility of the Christians to send out Christian missionaries. Christians must participate in the spread of the gospel and do so in a manner that honors God. I think God calls every single one of us to participate in what's known as the Great Commission we find in Matthew 28, where Jesus says, go therefore and make disciples to all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And that isn't just for a few people. That's for everyone. Everyone can be a part of the Great Commission and ought to be a part of the Great Commission. One can have a part by going, and one could have a part by helping. But everybody has a part, and they have to do it well, and they have to do it in a way that honors God. Now, we're going to get a chance to demonstrate this in 2 weeks on our sponsor Sunday here at this church. As we have our short-term missionaries, they're going to come up. We have 19 of them stand in front of our church, and we're going to ask that our church sponsors these missionaries. I'm going to ask that every single person that considers JRC their church, that's you, if you're a visitor, welcome, not you for this moment. I'm going to ask every person who considers this church their church to fill out a card and at least turn in one card. Now, it could be for, I will pray for you one time, and I will give you $1. That's fine. Or it can be, I will fast and pray for weeks and weeks for you, and I'll give you $5,000. It doesn't matter. The money isn't the point, or even the amount of prayers is the point. It's the point that all of us are called to be involved in the Great Commission, some as senders and some as goers. And we have that opportunity in just 2 weeks. So I'd like you to begin to pray. God, how do you want me to sponsor people? We're going to ask for 19 people to have a sponsor. A sponsor, someone will give them $500 and pray for them every day that they're there and meet with them one time before and after. And our church isn't that big. So about 20% of our church is going on this missions. So that means 80% is here, though. So there's plenty. So I want you to start praying. God, you want me to sponsor one person, five persons, 10 persons, however God wants you to be involved in honoring him by being part of the Great Commission. Now, if you're a goer, that's your part, and the senders, you're going to have your part in 2 weeks. So just start to pray for that. And the last thing he says is that you are willing to work together for the truth. We get more done when we work together. When we do things individually, it's okay, but God will exponentially increase our ability to reach people, to share the gospel, to do good, to draw others to him when we do it together. So in a couple weeks, we're going to commit to working together for our short-term missions, some going and some sending. And that's just really a microcosm of the heart of our church here at JRC, working together to build the best possible church that we can, local, small church, to build God's church, and to be involved in honoring God in the best way that we can in building his kingdom. Amen? That's the good guy. Here comes the bad guy. Here's the opposite guy. He said, I wrote to the church about Diotrephes. Don't name your kid Diotrephes in case you were mulling over names. Who loves to be first? He will not welcome us. So when I come, I'll call attention to what he's doing. Spreading malicious nonsense about us. Not satisfied with that, he even refuses to welcome other believers. And he also stops those who want to do so. And then he puts them out of the church. Now, John publicly rebukes this guy by name. He's like, I'll talk to you later about him. His name's Diotrephes. You know, like, you just called him out now. What do you mean, like, later? Like, he totally called him out in public. I don't know. Do you think John knew he was writing the eternal word of God when he wrote this down? And he's like, oh, yeah, sucker, you're going in. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, we've been reading this 2,000 years. People have been hating on Diotrephes because of his bad attitude and his bad example. That God, that guy got written in the book for all the wrong reason, you know. I hope this guy repented, and when we meet him in heaven, he's like, yeah, my bad. You know, I was like, yeah, my bad. Yeah, I was really kind of self-centered at the time. So he clearly has attributes and actions that are not exemplary as the contrast to Gaius. So the first one is he loves to be first. His primary problem is pride. Now, that's the original and greatest sin. It's the sin of Satan where he said, like, oh, God had his throne. I want to raise my throne so I too could be noticed. I want to raise my throne up next to God's. I want to be number one. I want to be recognized. I want to be noticed. I want people to see me. The opposite of the nature of Christ. Philippians says, Jesus, being in the very nature with God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped or held on to, but he released it for a little while and came in the form of a servant, even crucified on the cross. The desire to be noticed, it's one of the four big pulls from the world: money, power, pleasure, and admiration or fame, to be noticed, to be number one. And it goes directly against Jesus' call that the first would be last and to put other people ahead of ourselves. And so that is definitely not a characteristic that we should be demonstrating. That's the bad part that we see in Diotrephes. Then we see that he's not welcoming. In his pride, he didn't receive the Apostle John. This was in contrast to the humble hospitality of Gaius, who walked in the truth. Hospitality or welcoming attitude is often mentioned as an essential to living in a way that pleases God. And then it says he spreads malicious nonsense. And we know what that sounds like. Everyone who's been to high school or junior high, you know what malicious nonsense sounds like. Maybe you were that or you were the recipient of it, but I had a lot of malicious nonsense, I'll tell you. I was a chihuahua in junior high and high school because I was really little. I didn't grow. I was 5'1" when I got my driver's license, so I didn't grow until my junior and senior year. But I had a horrible mouth. I wasn't a believer, so I had a horrible mouth. I had really bad language. I had really bad ideas, and I would just be all the time. My voice hadn't changed, so it was probably that high. Yeah, do you want to open this? What are you going to do? You know, like, it's like, what is going on? And so spreading malicious nonsense, I'm like, I can hear my voice doing it. So I'm like, oh, my bad, God. Totally. And so I love this actually Greek word for nonsense. It comes from the idea of like when water boils and the bubble comes up and it pops and there's nothing. It's just boop. And that's what nonsense means. It's like boop. Look, it's just empty. It's useless. It's not good for anything. And so I think that's kind of cool etymology of that word. And so that's what this guy is just like popping off. Bloop, bloop, bloop. And it's nonsense. It's crazy. He's talking mess on people. He's spreading hate and gossip. Very not Christian. Right? And so it was in this guy's nature, what he was doing to slander people. Not only was it evil, but it was groundless. So it's not only is it malicious and harmful, but it's actually not based in anything real. And it's not actually factual, and it's just crazy nonsense. And that's how gossip tends to be. Gossip's really hurtful to the person that it's about, but it's also hurtful to the persons who are listening to that gospel. I mean, to that gossip. It soils everyone involved. It soils the speaker, it soils the listeners, and it soils the one to whom it's about. And so that's why the Bible's pretty clear pretty often about gossip being bad. And sometimes that seems like really maybe a small sin, right? Like, oh, that, it doesn't matter that much. But time and time again in the New Testament, gossip shows up in lists like don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't commit gossip. You're like, huh? But that's one of like a major thing. Like, don't talk mess, nonsense, malicious bubble talk, bloop, bloop, trying to pull someone else down. And the reason they do that, now I know for me, the reason I did that was massive insecurity. I pulled other people down so I could kind of raise myself up because I felt so low. And so that has no business in the kingdom of a believer. So whether you're a younger or old person, old people disguise it better, right? We say, oh, I was concerned about this person, so did you hear, blah, blah, blah. Like we just in high school, you just talk smack, and the older people, you have to guise it up a little bit because, like, you know, you don't want to get judged and stuff. You don't want people to talk about you. So at the office, we sort of hide it a little bit better than young people do. But still, it has no place in this sort of malicious nonsense talk about people or people you know or don't know. It doesn't have a part in the Christian. It shouldn't have a part in the Christian's life. Then next problem, he says he refused to welcome believers. Not only did he not welcome the apostle, but he didn't welcome other believers. So rejecting Christian brothers and sisters. Remember, if you'll remember with me, one of the key hallmarks to being Christian, the way people will know that we're Christian, is our love for one another. The Bible is really clear about that, one another as Christians. And so he's saying they're rejecting other Christians even, and so that's going to be a poor witness to the non-believers that are around. And then he stops other people from doing it as well. So not only does he just keep that opinion himself and reject believers, but he says, hey, we all should reject these believers. We shouldn't talk to them and that sort of thing. So he holds the wrong opinion, acts wrongly, and then convinces other people to act in that same wrong way. And lastly, he says, not only that, but let's expel some Christians out of our churches. And so he used his influence to forbid others from interacting in a positive way, but also say, hey, maybe that person shouldn't even be at the church at all. This is some nasty business from this guy. And here's the conclusion, John says. Dear friend, do not imitate what's evil, but what's good. Anyone who does what's good is from God. Anyone who does what's evil has not seen God. So this is the third time he referred to him as dear friend. John gave him two clear examples, one good, one bad, and now he applies the point. Follow the good as we serve a good God, and those who follow him will likewise do good. Avoid the evil. And so that's the point that he's writing here. And it's critical that we have good examples in our own lives. I always encourage our new parents, Krista and Trevor, our brand newest parents this week, and every single person that they talk to, every parent that's out there will want to give them advice, right? We always want to give people advice. And so they'll have 10,000 people tell them how to raise this baby, what to do, how to do it, and they'll be like different things. You need to wrap them hotter. You need to let them colder. You need to sleep on your side. You need to sleep on the stomach. You need to sleep on the back. You need to sleep on the head. Like all different ways that this baby is sleeping. I know, maybe not that one. The handstand is the only one that hasn't become popular yet for a very good reason. But there's a lot of opinions. So I always tell new parents, get two people that you trust and just have two people. Now, listen to everyone else. Be nice, you know, like, oh, thanks. Oh, wow, thank you for telling us that. But really have two people that you consider. If the kid's sick or has a runny nose, call, you're a nurse, of course, but then call one or two trusted friends. Just one or two, because there's otherwise too many opinions. It's important that we have people in our lives as good examples. It's important that we have people to look to who we can ask questions about, who we can emulate parts of our lives about. One of our huge blessings at this church is our diversity of ages and generations. We've got from one-year-olds to, like, more than one-year-old persons. And I want to encourage you, just like I do new parents, I want to encourage every one of you to find one or two people that are 20 years distance from you. Pick up one or two people that are 20 years distance from you, age difference, and intentionally develop a friendship. Now, I'm not saying a mentorship. That isn't what I'm saying. There's a place for mentorship. What I'm saying is I want you to develop a friendship with someone. Because in a mentorship, it's really the mentor sort of guiding the younger person. But that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people who could be examples in our lives in both directions. Perhaps wisdom from the older person and maybe some passion and vibrancy from the younger person, both benefiting and both looking at one another to be exemplary. One of the reasons why I have never burned out of Christian ministry, I love being at church. I've never gotten sick of being a pastor. I'm almost 35 years being a pastor now, and never once have I like been drained or burned out or not wanted to do it. And I think one of the keys is I don't actually think that I'm better than anybody else. I don't think that I'm spiritually higher than anyone. I don't think God likes me more than, and I am willing to not only pour out to people and share what God has shared with me, I'm actually willing to receive back from them. I think that relationships are reciprocal. And so many pastors burn out because they just pour out. No one poured into me. I'm like, what are you talking about? I go to church and there's 80 people that pour into me and they just get one from this direction. I was here on Friday, and there were four young people. I think it was 8th grade Ellie. You're in 8th grade, right? 8th grade Ellie, not Kevin, but Ethan Song. Annalie and Rachel. So a senior and 8th, 9th, 8th, right around that. And they were leading us in worship. They're not standing in worship and say like, oh, those are kids. They can't worship, you know, right now. No, they led me in worship. In that moment, I was learning under them. I was receiving from them. I was being blessed by them. They were exemplary for me in that situation. In the last 2 years that I've gone to mission, one of our young guys, Hank, he's like said, oh, I'll pray for you. I'll be your sponsor each time, you know? And he met with me each time. And it's not like he's in, I don't know, how old are you? Are you in high school yet? Are you still in junior high? Still in junior high? I don't know. I totally pay attention when we meet together, right? And we're about 20 years apart, right? Somewhere right around there. Close. Give or take. Come on. It's not specific. It's like generally like that, right? So when we meet, it's not like, oh, let me do this. He's the one that prays for me. I'm the pastor of the church, and this awesome junior higher prays for me, and I receive it. And he is exemplary for me. I was like, oh, look at this young person going out of his comfort zone to be a blessing to someone else, even someone that like is way older and can't probably relate to him that much, and he's willing to go out of his way. What an example that is for me. And so I value that relationship, and I receive from it. And that's what he's talking about. Like, examples don't, like, it can be 20 years, but it doesn't have to be. What's important or what's critical is that we have good examples around us, and we say, hey, that's a good example. I'm going to follow that. And we recognize people that are bad examples. You're going to have people that are in your life, and maybe you're even friends with them, and it's okay to still love and care from them. But if they're bad examples, you just don't want to copy that. You got to have people that are near enough to you that you can copy, that you know enough that you can ask questions about. Why do you do it that way? Why do you navigate in this manner? And so you've got to develop some relationships that are exemplary back and forth, to care for each other, to draw in a realness next to each other. And that is a really cool opportunity. I think our church does this better than anyone else, cross-generationally. Watch in the lobby, watch how the when we do the fantasy football, there's like kids and there's old people all trying to dunk on one another. I think the younger people tend to win more. I don't know if we have an old guy win yet in a while. So they're like, how's this work? And I'm like, how do I make a trade? That's how I roll. I think I was last. But those are really like powerful opportunities that are here that may not be available in all sorts of places. That's one of the really cool features of our church, I'll be honest, is that our kids walk out and they're going to talk to you, and they'll be a junior high or high school chatting it up with you, and they're not scared or embarrassed. And I pray that you receive from that as much as you give out to that. And vice versa, young people, that you would receive from the older folks and see them as examples, that we can mutually edify one another. Now, John gives one last good example because he wanted to go two for one. He says, you know that guy Demetrius? Like, he's well-spoken of everyone. And even by the truth itself, we also speak well of him. And we know that our testimony is true. And so Demetrius was so faithful that John used, like, the personification of truth as saying, like, yeah, that guy's got it going on. And so he doubles up with a second example. Lastly, good examples are best found face to face. Let's see how he closes this letter. I have much to write to you, but I don't want to do it with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we'll talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings. Greet the friends there by name. So this letter has all been about contention and conflict, right? And John appropriately ends it with peace. A desire and an expectation for peace. Soul peace, but also relational peace. In addition to that familiar blessing of peace upon Gaius, John also reminds him and us of the common ties that Christians have, even if they're separated by long distances. Greet one another, pray for one another, think about one another. We certainly resonate with John's desire for personal face-to-face communication rather than the writing of letters. People, actual people, they're really important. As tech advances and as third spaces diminish, third spaces is like not home, not work, but like other sort of community spaces where people gather, those diminish, they diminish consistently in America. And we're more and more isolated. So tech is a great connector, but it's also a great disconnector. And so we have an incredible place as a church to provide third space for people, to provide a place where there can be connection, personal connection, human face-to-face connection. And so don't let Satan convince you to stay home and watch online unless you just had a baby or something like that, or you're out of the country. Get up, get here, and be together. Budget your Sunday so that you don't just slip in and slip out as fast as you can, because that's harder to make relationships. It's harder to build friendships. It's harder to see good examples if you just sneak in and out and you think it's only about the service or about the music or the message. It isn't. It's about community and connection and togetherness. That's the church. The church isn't my Sunday message. That's a little tiny part of it. But the church is us together being examples for one another, building and blessing one another. What a joy it is to have the opportunity to experience good examples in faith, face-to-face, right here at our church. So we're going to do something I never do. We're going to do something I hate to do. I think it's absolutely cringy and awkward, and it's the lamest thing that churches do. And we never do this as a church, but when I do it, then it's really cool. So let's do today. I'm going to have you stand up, and we're going to close in worship. But as you stand up, I want you to look at your neighbor left and right, and I want you to say, I'm glad you're here. We never do this. It's so cringe when churches do it. But so the praise team is going to come up. You're going to stand up and you're going to turn to your neighbor and say, I am glad you are here. this morning.